And that stuck to me. And so that forces me. It has forced me. Take my time to do it right the first time, because you're not going to have time to do it over. I don't think we can say now, and this may be a little bit controversial, but something to think about, that we can say we're training for certainty. Because, you know, nothing's really certain. Just given the environment that we're in and what we're seeing play out in Ukraine, it's like, they couldn't have trained for that. But they're very agile, they're very adaptive, and, you know, a lot of uncertainty they've dealt with.
Greetings, and welcome to the Operational Arch, the official podcast of the School of Advanced Military Studies, dedicated to bridging the gap between tactics and strategy through the study of operational art and the operational level of war. I'm Major Josh Bedingfield, here alongside Majors Kelsey Kurtz and Dan Warner. We'll be your hosts today. Today's guest is the commander of the Combined Arms Center, Lieutenant General Milford H. Beagle. Lieutenant General Beagle commissioned as an infantry officer in 1990 and recently finished his command of the historic 10th Mountain Division, Climb to Glory. He is a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan whose career assignments have spanned the globe and is a 2003 graduate of the Advanced Military Studies Program at SAMS.
Welcome, sir, and thank you for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Fired up today. Podcasts are great things. And, you know, this being one of your first, absolutely excited.
We could not think of a better first guest. You being a SAMS graduate and the tenure of your career and the experiences that you've had, you were at the very top of our list for starting us off strong, sir. So we're greatly appreciative of your time.
Josh, I'll tell you, I'm flattered, but I can think of 100 better guests. For sure. Right? You know, I wish you'd asked me first. I'd have gave you 100 names. But either way, I'm truly honored. This is a place you never expect yourself to be. And, you know, if I were to go back and talk to Major Beagle sitting in SAMS, you know, he would have, like, run me out of the room. He's like, okay, you're on something, you know. But I would say the same thing about you or any of your peers. I mean, you never know where this education, what you're doing, you know, over the past, you know, year or the year that you're going to be here. In addition to CGSC, is what that's going to do for you. And it's just phenomenal. It's not about the promotions or positions you go in. It's just how much better equipped you're going to be, you know, when you leave Fort Leavenworth.
Yes, sir. Yeah, well, I think we might be able to have a short conversation with Major Beagle today, because some of the topics of conversation today are going to ask you to kind of draw back into that SAMS rucksack. So kind of the context for today's episode, you recently assumed command of the Combined Arms Center, and some of your opening remarks during your change of command set up this inaugural episode of the Operational Arch quite well. You said, and I'm going to quote, "Here at Fort Leavenworth, we have many, many great minds, but we have one goal: to drive change. With this change, we will win our nation's wars, which is what we are expected to do. We will deliver on that promise." Further, you included the goal of, quote again, "educating and developing leaders and Army civilian professionals who are trained for certainty and educated for uncertainty, continuously seeking to improve the profession of arms among your key tasks." So operational artists are one of the products of the Combined Arms Center generated through the School of Advanced Military Studies, and I would argue one of the ways you intend to carry out and deliver on that promise and prepare us to meet future challenges. We'd like to talk to you today about the value of operational art to the joint force, the nature of the modern operational level of war, and what leaders should expect from the operational artists that are part of their teams. So our first question for you today, sir, is kind of our token question, but you're going to get it first. Would you mind sharing with us what your personal definition of operational art is?
All right. And I'm going to throw your first token question like on his head, right? Because you know, thought a lot about it. And you think a lot about when somebody asks you, and knowing, you know, we wear the cloth of our nation, and somebody says, what is your definition of it? Well, we all know. We have doctrine. We have, you know, many things that, you know, SOPs, TTPs, where we have definitions for things. And so when you ask me, and I went back and looked at, you know, the Joint Pub definition of, you know, operational art. And what does it mean? It's like, it's perfect. It's right. So I don't need to come over to the top with, you know, my own version of it. But a lot of times we do. And that's what, you know, one thing that, you know, it's not a peeve of mine or anything like that, but it's a case where, you know, we have to understand and know fundamentally, you know, our own doctrine, our own, you know, definitions. It's our common language, you know, across the board. And I think sometimes we put ourselves in a little bit of danger when somebody comes up with their own interpretation of something that should be standard. That's our common language piece. But that being said, I'll give you my personal interpretation of, you know, our doctrinal definition and how we've laid it out. I mean, cognitive approach above, you know, anything else. That is what I take the most out of, you know, when you ask me the definition of, you know, operational art, it's that cognitive approach. And then as we lay it out, you know, what supports it is that skill, that knowledge, your experience, is all those things, not only for the commander, but for the staff, all that supports, you know, that cognitive approach that now you're going to apply to design, to create, you know, operations campaigns, you know, where you're employing forces and then you're integrating your ends, ways, and means and risk. So it's the same definition. You know, again, I don't have my own interpretation of it, but it's my understanding of it. And the parts of it that really jump out to me, and I saw a social media post the other day from Dr. Greer, Jim Greer. So he was the director of SAMS when I was at SAMS. And somebody was, you know, posted, because I'll post whatever book I'm reading. So Colonel Morgado, he'll come back with what he's reading. So I keep adding to my list of what I'm reading, because everybody does it. I mean, and somebody puts up On War, Clausewitz. And Dr. Greer, it was a great point. And he said, read it slow and take away what means, what you find, when you find something that means something to you, you know, walk away with that, right? Don't try to take away what somebody else does, you know, but read it slowly and whatever speaks to you. That was his words. Whatever speaks to you, take that away from it.
So I think it's a very interesting point that you've made, sir, about how there's a doctrinal definition that really ties us together. And in your experience, would you consider a need for that context or that what we take away from it to be the skill of generating that shared understanding on a staff? The doctrinal definition, you know, you read it and three people kind of understand it differently. And then the skill that you're talking about is generating shared understanding through that, those multiple takes.
Yeah. And to me, when you look at the definition as your divorce point, you know, and again, it lays it out in JP3O, you know, it's the skill, it's the knowledge, it's the experience. And one thing I learned as a young planner, you know, leaving SAMS, because I told a story the other day to the ASLSP class that, you know, the lead planner is always going to be your O5 when you get there, especially at a three-star level. Well, that O5 got moved to a different position. So now three young majors come out of SAMS. We all end up at a three-star headquarters. One of my peers calls me and he said, guess what? You're going to be the chief of plans. Well, that's not right, because it should be an 05, not an 04. And he said, well, you've got data rank. And it's just the three of us. And you're like, awesome, you know, great. And we don't really have the experience for that level, but we had the knowledge coming out of Leavenworth. You know, we had the skills, you know, we had the will to do that, even though that's not included in the definition. But once we got there, then we also had to educate. So now we're bringing together OPTs doing those type things. One, we had to get everybody to a certain level of, you know, knowledge, and then, you know, apply, you know, the skills that we learn to really get our arms around, you know, the cognitive aspect of, hey, what is it we're trying to do as we're designing, you know, campaigns and operations. And there are some things that, you know, we did do, but we just had to literally open folks' mind and get that understanding. And it was all operational art, because ends, ways, means, you know, integration and risk, and laying those things out over and over. That was just a continual thing that we were doing. And I mean, I got a little bit away from your question, but you put me back in that spot. So lots of things, you know, just kind of rushed to the front of my mind.
All right, sir. So with that, you know, it sounds like, you know, in a common understanding of operational art and the operational level of war is it's dialectic, right? So over the last 20 years since you graduated SAMS, how has your understanding of operational art and the operational level of war evolved based on your experiences and or watching Army doctrine evolve in the last two decades?
Yeah, Dan, I would say, you know, it's given me a better appreciation for it over time, you know, and that's how, you know, my understanding of operational art has evolved. It's just, you know, that appreciation of, you know, what is it you really need when you're going from, you know, tactical actions into trying to get to strategic objectives. And even from the start at SAMS, you have a pretty good understanding of it, you know, from what I've seen between, you know, SAMS and up to this point and working in the Pentagon a couple times, I've gained a better understanding of it, you know, and then linked back to our doctrine. It's just made it, you know, better for me to, one, continue to fully have to understand the doctrine first, because that's always your basis. Because as you start to do things with regard to operational art, now you're divorcing away from it. And you've always got to know, you know, where that baseline was. I mean, you know, we didn't learn design when we were going through SAMS. Design wasn't a part of it. But now that design is, now you've got to understand that, right? And you don't want to divorce yourself too far away from doctrine. So it's always being able to stay rooted. I think our doctrine has been, you know, very solid over many years, but it's just me being mindful. And, you know, the takeaway for me with operational art is, hey, don't get too unrooted from, one, your doctrine, because it might not be design. It might not be MDMP. It might be something else that helps you get there. And I think that's the beauty of, you know, what I've learned. I mean, I've read and continue to read a lot of different books. I've used Scrum, you know, at times, you know, in commands to help everybody get their arms around it and to solve a problem and to integrate, you know, in ways and means. You know, I've read things like, you know, measure what matters. I mean, because then you got to assess along the way as well, right? How do you do that, right? We have our ways, we have our approaches, but still for the same purpose. So now you can even go outside of what we teach in the schoolhouse of giving you ways, building that cognitive approach of how you get after the same insight that we lay down fundamentally for operational art, if that makes sense.
Sir, that makes perfect sense. You just discussed a lot about cognitive approach and how our different doctrinal frameworks have evolved over time. How do you see operational art enhancing the military planning processes such as MDMP or JPP? And do you have any recommendations for SAMS planners to kind of have those conversations with their bosses and their subordinates on maybe new changes to the doctrine or new frameworks that the CAC is trying to encourage here at the school?
Yeah, and I think the, you know, our MDMP and JPP, I mean, they're always you know, enhanced by, you know, what we do with, you know, operational design when we come up with, you know, operational approaches. I mean, it helps us, you know, really get there. I don't think there's, you know, a lot of change in just kind of our base set, if I use that term, our base set of how we do things, because at echelon, you know, we need those reps and sets just to know, you know, exactly what we're doing. It's like our blocking and tackling, right? We got to know that basic, the basics of that. The thing that we do need to understand is, you know, at what point in time, and that's where it becomes, you know, again, more, you know, cognitive, more feel, more instinct, more experience, is when do I use that approach and when do I have to accelerate? You know, how do I know how to condense something and do it right and still get the same level of outcomes? I mean, that's the balance that, you know, I think we'll spend all of our careers because of situations we'll find ourselves in, different circumstances, you'll never really find that balance. But if you continue to remain, you know, mentally agile over time with knowing all the approaches that you can leverage, you know, it's going to help get you to where you need to be. Because if you're in combat, typically our bias is to act versus bias to understand. But we all understand as planners, we kind of are always in the mindset of, you know, bias to understand first, then act. Well, sometimes you got to flip that, right? And how do we still get the same level of, you know, detail, the same level of rigor in everything that we do? It's just a combination of leveraging all those processes. But to me, it's never, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's figure out, you know, how does this apply? When do we apply it? And then we continue to further educate on that, if that makes sense.
So you just mentioned the need to sometimes act and then understand versus the relatively more normal concept where we understand and then act. So if we acknowledge that MDMP and JPP are in some ways a tool, right, that allows us to understand and make sense of complex systems, and that operational art is kind of the premier tool that we have to really dive in to complexity and parse it out into its constituent elements, mm-hmm, and kind of see through those wicked problems.
Right.
In your experience, and I'm thinking about your division command at 10th Mountain or some of those problems that you've encountered up in your days up at the National Capital Region, what do you think about the need to make sense of problems and the need through operational art and the need to respond in a timely manner? Right? What's the relationship between a need to act and a need to understand, and how do you apply operational art knowing that it comes at the cost of time in a time constrained environment?
No, that's a great question. And I'm going to try to give you a coherent answer, you know, to that one, because the relationship is there. And I think, you know, at the tactical level, that's where in combat, that's where you see that, you know, bias to act, that need to act. We're not doing a lot of thinking. It's drills. I mean, it's, you know, TTPs, I mean, it's those type things. But more at the tactical level when I say that, that bias to act. But you're right, it's still that relationship over time. But our tendency, you know, generally, you know, it is to act. We want to get through things quick. We want to, you know, get the decisions. We want to, you know, get the right outcomes, you know, much quicker, and then on to the next thing. But it's that balance. And it really comes, I think, from the commander. When you look at the commander activities, you know, the commander's going to pull that trigger. And there's a lot of experience and skill, you know, the commander's going to have. So really, it's the commander's got to teach others. As I go through my commander's activities, understand, visualize, describe, direct, okay, I'm going to need this much faster to get to a decision, because you kind of understand the temporal nature, the time and space nature of things. Hopefully, the team, the staff recognizes that as well. But again, we always talk about with MDMP, who's the one person that's got to be most linked in, most, you know, integrated into the whole thing? Commander, right? But given commander's activities, the commander can say, you know what, we got to take a little bit more time, you know, with to help me understand, help me visualize. And really, the operational, you know, art part of it is to help you get those, to me, those first couple of steps. Understand, visualize. Okay, I can see it. Now maybe that will help me accelerate. But I don't think there's a cookie, you know, cutter solution, even if it's in crisis. I mean, I was talking about crisis yesterday. In some cases, I got it. It's a crisis to everybody else. But to me, the commander, we got to slow this down and like really take a look at it. Because as the commander and what we as operational, you know, planners learn is the commander's got to see second, third order. And somebody's got to help them see second, third order. Because we can get you decision. We can get you the answer. We can get you the course of action. But we didn't talk about second, third order. Now we've got to deal with that. And that can be done quickly, right? And I think, you know, you're learning ways, approaches. I've seen it play out many times to lay all those things out, you know, very quickly, and then come back to at least know we've put as many of the details, even our doctrine tells us that, put many of the details into conceptual thinking as you can up front, which seems counterintuitive. Well, what's conceptual? Well, it's a good idea. If you kind of know some of the details, you can integrate them in early. Go ahead and do those things. I mean, the one great thing we had, short war story, when I was in SAMS, and we learned it early. One of our first orders we had to do, they said, you know, the scenario was Secretary of Defense is coming in. I forget this, the exact scenario that we were doing. And, you know, we had, you know, 4 or 5 hours to prepare the mission analysis part of it. And so we all get in a room, whiteboards, everything else. Somebody comes in, 45 minutes. SecDef will be here in 20 minutes. And we're like, we're only 45 minutes in. We hadn't. So we learned then is that we're not going to go through like lockstep and work our way through. We got to start at the end, work our way back, and then reapply. Okay, how do we accelerate this? And then so now if we're going to brief this out, we've got to paint the whole picture. And some of it is going to be just good assumptions. But some of it's going to be a little bit of guesswork in there, non-doctrinal. But we've got to lay those things out now to that level of leader in this condensed amount of time. And I've always kept that in the back of my mind is, yeah, we may have, you know, 8 hours to look at this problem. But in the first hour, I want you to at least walk your way all the way through from, you know, front to back and back to front, at least conceptually, figure out what details we need to really understand so I can start to get my arms around second, third order effects, risk, those type things. And then as we have the time, now we can take a more deliberate approach. So I'm not sure if that completely circled the square for you, but
it sounds almost iterative, sir, where the framing becomes wider as the time is available. Right. Iterate quickly, and then as the resource of time makes itself available, we're going to iterate, widen that frame, scope down in where necessary. But I think it's a very excellent way of circling the square.
Yeah, and how do you communicate that? So to me, it's really with the planners. We'll learn the process. We'll learn the approaches. But then the hard part to really learn is how do you now communicate it? Because again, when the commander does come in, how are you going to communicate where, you know, he or she may already have, and here's kind of what I'm thinking, because as I walk away, the wheels are still spinning, you know, understand, visualize. So when I come back in and I hear what the planners have to say, I want to go a different path. Roger that, sir. Wrong answer as a planner. Yes, sir, ma'am, if you can let me walk this through two more steps, maybe you can see kind of what we saw. Still conceptual or, you know, within, you know, what we've, you know, assessed to this point. That may steer you a different way. It comes from the courage of the planners. It comes from, you know, the commander being a little bit more open and not being as, you know, locked in mentally to just, you know, my instinct, my gut tells me, my skill tells me, my experience tells me that's the way to go. I get all the work team's been doing. My gut, what I've seen on the ground tells me X. And so it's that ability to communicate everything that you just said, that framing, how it's been framed. And then if you have to shift the commander's thinking, how do you do that? Right. And then how do you have the backing from the work you've done to really get them there?
Sir, yeah, that sounds like, you know, a very cohesive team operating on all cylinders. And, you know, one of the most important things we do and one of the hardest things to do is develop others. So for especially operational artists, how do you develop operational artists to meet current and future operating environments, whether that's as through peer leadership when you show up at a division or a corps interacting with other majors, all the way up to, you know, your position right now as CAC commander?
That's a great question, Dan. You have to do that daily. And it has to be integrated in all the things that you're doing. I can give you, you know, many examples. And I go back to the example, you know, when I left SAMS, I mean, what did we have to do? So we established a process where every Thursday we would do OPTs. We could have something major to look at or plan or not, but we were bringing in the same groups, you know, every Thursday. It was because then you think about the context that I'm talking about, you know, the time of, you know, across the Army, typically everybody did sergeant's time on Thursday. I mean, wherever you came from, everybody knew Thursday was pretty much guarded, even your higher level leadership. So going to the command, you know, that me and two of my peers did as SAMS planners, we knew that was guarded. So we're like, hey, we're going to pull everybody's planners on Thursday, and we educated. And sometimes we would have a big problem to solve. Sometimes we'd have a small problem to solve. And we'd have, you know, that window, that amount of time to really go through and train and educate and create essentially a safe space. I mean, I use the term safe space because you'd have anybody from a captain, just based on, because given the size of the staff, that was their lead planner, right? To another major, to a lieutenant colonel. And how are you, you know, as now, you know, 2-3 majors, you got, you know, 2 or 3 other lieutenant colonels in the room. It's like, well, who are you to teach us about planning an MDMP, right? And we had some of that, but you've got to work through that friction and everything else. The best part of it is when you do make it routine and you have all the right touch points, you never know what that environment's going to be like. And you're exactly right. That was pretty much an example of a, you know, very, you know, fine-tuned, cohesive team. Everything works. It's all Skittles and rainbows. Everything's great. But we didn't walk into that. What we walked into was a case where the chief of staff was like, he was so SAMS averse that, you know, we were just like, you know, I don't know, just think of a term, but persona non grata, I mean, walking around the headquarters. And, you know, we were doctrine Nazis. He would say those words literally. All these things, don't bring me that doctrine, and all kinds of four-letter words after that. And so, but the boss understood it. But again, as we developed things, we had to go through the chief. He's like, don't want to hear it. You guys coming out of Leavenworth, got all that stuff in your head, don't want to hear it, bunch of crap, you know, X, Y, and Z. Here's what the boss wants. And we figured out, you know, he didn't know the boss as well as he thought. And that took a lot of personal courage from us as planners. So now that we're into, you know, major things in that theater and having to brief as planners, and me being the lead planner, so that's why I always use that, because I got a lot of scars, you know, going up having to brief, you know, mission analysis, courses of action, those type things. And we've pre-briefed, you know, the chief and the three, but of course not the boss, but the chief is always in the room. And he's, you know, told us, you know, what to do. But we didn't do that. Like, I got it, but we know what we know. We center of gravity. I mean, oh my God, don't say center of gravity in front of him. That's like, you know, didn't want to hear all that stuff. Center of gravity analysis. I mean, because that was what we had learned. Didn't want to hear it. And so I remember one particular briefing, mission analysis, or course of action, I think, brief. And I'm laying everything out, and my peers and I had set up a signal. I said, I'm not going to look at the chief because that's going to throw me off. He's going to be giving me cutthroat signals and everything else. So I'm going to look at you guys looking at the chief and telling me what the body language is. And so I'm briefing the boss. I'm looking at my peers in the room, and they're like, and I'm like, okay, but I'm going to keep going. And so finally, you know, we get through the brief, sir, any questions, feedback, concerns? And I look directly at the boss, and he gave great guidance. Oh, by the way, the boss happened to be a SAMS graduate, right? And 3-star level. So I'm looking at the boss. He's elated. He's like, great with the products, loves everything, gives his guidance. And then I finally look back over at the chief, and the chief's like, all thumbs up, like, great. But if we'd listened to you, we would have just got tore up you know, completely, because you'd steered us. And that was like every time that happened. And he really never fully came around, but you know, it was, you know, that, you know, intestinal fortitude, that courage to do what you know is right, you know, not for an individual, but for the command, for the commander. And you're all going to have it when you leave. It's just, you know, putting it to use. Because I still think there's some out there, got a few non-believers, but, you know, that's the thing that, you know, I need, you know, everybody carrying forward. I mean, understanding the doctrine, you know, truly being, you know, you can say the doctrine guru is a bad term. I won't use the other word that we recall, but being a doctrinal guru is a bad thing. No, it's not. I mean, that's our base foundation, you know, of understanding it. And then you're just much better for it, because you can divorce from that all day long, because you know exactly where you divorce from, which means you know exactly where you can go back to if you get lost somewhere along the way.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that vignette. We talk a lot about, you know, courage on the battlefield, but there's also a lot of courage that goes in the planning rooms too, to potentially bring up contentious points. And you brought up a very good point with safe spaces. And that's one of the things I think at SAMS we really get right, is the variety of interactions that we have with guests, with guest speakers, different lecturers, and as well the students and faculty, to have a safe space and, you know, maybe even challenge upcoming doctrine, especially this year with the different operating concepts and the new documents coming out through Army Command.
Yeah. And what we don't understand, we typically fight. And that's the thing I learned even then. You know, you bring those captains in, as we had those sessions every Thursday. You know, some people were just going to come in to be defensive because they didn't know. And we're like, look, you know, we're not going to say we're the experts. We did get an additional year of education. So we're here to teach as well, right? We learned a lot of stuff for a reason. You know, it's not to use it all in planning, but it's to educate and help, you know, you understand, you know, what we're doing, what this means, you know, all those type things. And it gained us a lot. And we would have, and I remember one of the captains who's now a colonel, still in the Army, just came out of brigade command. And, you know, and she was on fire, you know, over the course of about 6 months. I mean, her boss would have thought, you know, she was like the best thing ever, because she'd learned. We taught her what it mean, what it meant to plan, what it meant to understand doctrine, all those things. Whereas, you know, I think coming in, and it wasn't just her, it was a couple of others that came in, and they were just kind of go in their shell and just offer their little piece and not really learn. But giving them the confidence, giving them the power to go back to their bosses, sound different, speak different, have a different level of understanding, you know, that gives you a lot of pride in doing that when you talk about, you know, leader development and how you do it. But I think you can do that through the course of everything that you do. Me as a commander, I've always been able to leverage, you know, and it's not through our, you know, MDMP sessions or anything else. It's like the daily sessions that we have. It's like, how do you write? How do you see this problem? How do you lay out your briefs to me? You're just your daily brief. We could be talking about the Christmas tree lighting, but how did you think your way through that, right? And the iterative nature of it. I mean, I do it now. Like one example I use now is, you know, my read books. Every night I take home a read book, but it allows me to see exactly where everybody is on the staff based on how they present products and how they see problems. Like I can see it because you produce it and you put it on PowerPoint or you put it in words. So now I'm not grading your homework. I'm just seeing how you think. And that allows us to iterate, because now as I give you notes back, circle things, underline things, I'm not grading your homework. Now you see how I think. And so we iterate together. And what I've seen over time is you see writing get better. You see the cognitive abilities get better. You see the intellectual abilities get better to solve problems just through something as simple as that. But I've used that for many, many years. And it really works when you use it across the staff, because it's something that you do daily. So when something, you know, comes up as formal as, you know, planning for an operation or planning operations campaigns, you know, or MDMP, everybody's gotten more reps and sets. In some cases, they don't even realize the reps and sets that they got, you know, outside of the formal process.
So it sounds like some of your iterative cycles of education, your openness and skill and experience really helped develop non-believers with doctrine, at least to healthy skeptics. And as the Army introduces, you know, its third operating approach, since you've been a SAMS graduate, this is something that we're going to have to deal with. The non-believers who are struggling to move from the tactical level of understanding and integrating their different domains when they just want to be on a tank. That's what LISCO has taught them, is that the perfect battlefield is civilian-less, just tank on tank battle in the open plains. You know, something that resembles Clausewitz in Germany's battlefield. So as we're talking about these three dimensions, integrating human dimension, the information dimension, and the physical dimension, and bringing those non-believers to a minimum of healthy skeptics, from your vantage point, what are some of the greatest challenges that we're going to have to overcome to adopt our perception and cognitive approach of the operational level of war?
Yeah, it's really getting arms around, you know, how the domains and the dimensions, I mean, how they're interrelated and what they really mean. When you talk the domains, I mean, we're talking about, that's how you see not only your, but, you know, enemy capabilities, you know, kind of as a simple way of laying it out. But then it's through the dimensions that you can see effects. And I think that's one of the biggest leaps we're, you know, going to have to make is, what do you mean see effects? You know, you can see it play out in the Ukraine, you know, the effects that, you know, actions in the physical dimension have, you know, the information, you can see all those things play out. And so we've got to get comfortable with dealing with understanding the domains, the dimensions, and how to leverage them. Because, I mean, again, that's going to allow us to see, is what I'm doing, is that working? Because that's where I can see the effects. But if I only want to see it physical, like you said, I want a tank on tank. Okay, you're just looking for physical, you know, kind of things. And that's really not going to help you. The information, I mean, how do we leverage it there? If you were to talk to, you know, General Donahue from 18th Airborne Corps, I mean, he's all in the information piece. I mean, he totally gets it now, right? And he did before, you know, going there, because that's part of what 18th Airborne Corps, even under General Carrilla, was getting our arms around, which was innovation, with data literacy, all those type things, clearly in that information space and being able to understand it. And I think one of the greatest things, you know, coming out of, you know, Russia, Ukraine, is, you know, now you have to look at things of sense, shoot, social media. And you think about that and people are like, what do you mean? That's not doctrinal. But that's how they're operating right now. And if you were to talk to General Donahue, you know, he would tell you in some cases is social media, sense, shoot, social media. You know, we look at D3A as a lens, but I mean, that's kind of the lens now, because again, that's that information space and we need to know it. We need to understand it, but we'll have leaders that are adverse to, you know, just being on social media, but it's not about just being on social media. You know, that's an area whereas, you know, we go to NTC, we go to JRTC, I mean, that's physical, right? Well, where do we really get the information space? Yeah, you can get it there, but just day to day it's happening all around us. And how do we really understand it? And how do we create effects? I mean, just with an organization, through using information. It's about the influence. How are we doing that day in and day out? Well, if you're not operating in that space, I used to say play in that space, but it's operate. If you're not operating in that space, then you're losing out on the sets and reps. And they're happening all the time. So whether or not you want to be a part of it, it's happening to you, whether you realize it or not. And it's linking it back to our doctrine just to get the light switch to come on and you know, our own, you know, formation's head of like, here's why you have to understand that, because it's happening to you. And other aspects of it too, with regard to, and you can try this one, you know, when you look at all the dimensions, you know, before, and I remember coming out of SAMS and even through Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, there was not a case ever where we would step, you know, off our fob or go anywhere and you hear something buzzing above you and we wouldn't look up. We didn't bother to look up. That was ours. Don't have to worry about it. And I've watched on the news, you know, and they'll show like a, you know, you see a scene in Ukraine and it was a few weeks ago when they had some of the other drones from, I think maybe Iran or somewhere that they received. And you're watching these citizens walk around and then as soon as they hear a buzz, everybody's looking up. Well, that would be us too, right? We don't do it as much in the United States, but when we go other places now, it's like, that's different. Did you not see your behavior changed because of the environment around you? Now you hear something buzzing. You're like, oh, let me make sure that's ours. Whereas before you just knew, you didn't bother. Didn't bother to look up, you know. So long answer, probably disconnected, disintegrated answer to a short question.
Sir, that's great. Thank you. I just have a quick follow-up question. You know, we're entering into an interwar period not too dissimilar to one's, you know, cyclical nature, right, of the military and also professional military education. Is the CAC heading any initiatives to help introduce those diverse frameworks and education in the coming years?
Yeah. So everything that we're doing with, you know, PME modernizations, you know, with the Captain Career Course all the way through to the CGSC, I'll get another look. It'll be my first look at, you know, how we design curriculums. But it's really not, you know, about that with me. My thing is, and it's always been, you know, something that everybody's thought about, but how do you make that more agile to, you know, change our curriculums, change our POIs? And that's all the way through to basic training. I mean, I had 3 years of, you know, being in a basic training environment. And even there, you know, you have to have that agility to change things, you know, not just because, I mean, again, the thought's going to go in it, the deliberate, you know, approach and work is going to go into it, but it needs to change quicker. I mean, now if you look at just a standard POI, even for basic training, it's going to take you about 2 years to change. We have got to break that model. Similar to some, you know, POIs, how we change things, it's just the approach. I mean, how do we set it up to where, you know, I'm dating myself when I talk about Tetris and those type things, but it can still be just as agile when we can take a piece out, and I don't use modular, take a piece out, put a piece in, right? Because of what we're seeing. We got to read the signposts of what we're seeing to get ahead of it. Because at some point, you're going to be too late. And then we're like, oh, we need to teach that. Well, we're behind already. How do we get ourselves ahead of things, even in our, you know, education approaches? A lot of other areas that we're looking at, and, you know, now that we're, you know, reconnected with AFC and TRADOC, and in the role from CAC, is if you look at our .mil PFP, you know, domains and how we integrate those. That is one of the fundamental things that we do at CAC, you know, for our enterprise, is that .mil PFP integration. Well, the M and O drive it, right? We want an MDTF. It's going to look like this. Awesome. And here's what it needs. That drives everything. So what do you have when you have that as a case? Well, you have, in a lot of cases, the cart leading the horse. We've got to get that back in order. That's why you have organizations, and I've been the recipient of it. We all have at some point in time. Why did I get this piece of kit and I don't have the soldiers and the organization is not fully established? And when I came out of school, I didn't learn any of that. We've got to get that right. And it's much, much more complex, because this is something that's not complicated. It's very complex to put all that back in order. But our focus is going to be on all the non-material aspects of .mil PFP and how do we get that integrated. That allows us to catch up and then stay ahead of the O and the M that's coming. So now, if we do get it right by 2030, not only is the doctrine already there, which we're on a great path with doctrine, the organization is set, we know what it looks like, we know what it needs, the training, that's already done. So when you arrive, you know, now you're just waiting. You're waiting on that equipment if, you know, you're not getting there at the same time. So that would be pure beauty at the end of the day. But that's part of, you know, my tenure here, is working those things to put all that in order. But it's a huge climb, a lot of bureaucracy, to be quite honest. We know in our own formations there's a lot of necessary bureaucracy we have to fight through, and there's a lot of, you know, unnecessary bureaucracy we have to fight through. And then there's resourcing on top of that. So then there's a great dose of reality we have to, you know, get our arms around. So things still may not look right, you know, even in a couple of years, but that's going to be the goal. We've got to set it right because we recognize where the problems are, if that helps.
I think it helps. That's awesome, sir. You know, you're bringing up a little bit of my scar tissue. I was a company commander for a schoolhouse down at Fort Benning for a few years in TRADOC, and changing POIs is a tall hill, but it is definitely a hill worth climbing. But maybe to bring up a more inherently agile, you know, with size, agility goes down, program that we have to educate and inform. What advice might you have to individuals or units through their NCO development programs, officer development or leader development programs, who are interested in these concepts that you just brought up, or just enhancing their own study of operational art? How might they get after that from your experience?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, things like you're doing, like right now, like we're doing right now with the podcast, because everybody's going to learn a different way. The other great thing for me before SAMS was, you know, I got my master's from K-State, adult education, right? But that appealed to me because a lot of what we do is we educate. Very helpful. But and the key thing you take away from that is everybody learns differently, right? Not a surprise to a lot of folks, but through podcasts, through things like Army Leader Exchange. I mean, we're putting it out there. So one, we can, you know, create the sense of urgency to get people, you know, back to things like it, read through the doctrine. You may not understand all of it, but you can leverage something else to help you with that understanding if you're not physically, you know, in a classroom. How do I integrate that into my leader development, you know, day to day? One of the things that, you know, I've done, we did it at 10th Mountain Division. We did it at, you know, Fort Jackson, did it as a brigade commander, is How do you get people that tell you, you know, I'm not a reader. I don't like reading. We're going to have a problem because there's a lot of stuff we have to read, right? And pretty thick stuff. It's not totally dense, but you're going to have to read it at some point in time. I can't just tell it. You have to make it mean something to you and get your own understanding from it. But, you know, how do you develop your leader development program to where it meets that need of your formation? I mean, for the person that doesn't like to read, for the person that might not write as well, for the person that, you know, may not grasp things as quickly as everybody else, but how do you make it safe for them to grasp it? I'm blown away, and I still don't know, probably about 45, 50 days in the job now, you know, of all the things that we do here, from, you know, the Combined Arms Center training to the Mission Command Center of Excellence, all the tools they have out there, we just have to use them. And I'm guilty of it as well, being in many positions to where, well, I didn't know we had that. It's like easy buttons of things that I could have easily integrated, not just into leader development. Like, hey, company commander, have you seen that tool? That's kind of like your how-to of how to develop your training schedule. And it's like step-by-step walk you through it, you know. But we've got to leverage and integrate that more into what we're doing. But as you know from your time at Benning, our most precious resource is time. Time. So again, we will throw away the most important things to include PT because something else is pressing. But it takes all of us as leaders to really assess that time and figure out, you know, what's priority and where are you going to spend that time. And one of the places has got to be in your education and it's got to be in your training. And you can't circumvent it because when you do, we all know it's just going to come back to bite you at some point. And I had a great boss that would say, if you don't have time to do it right, you're not going to have time to do it over. And that stuck to me. And so that forces me, and it has forced me, take my time to do it right the first time because you're not going to have time to do it over. And when you think about it in that sense, think about those times where, you know, you've done something wrong. You've come out of NTC or JRTC. Things are all screwed up. You get back to home station and we don't have the time to fix that. You know, you just got to move to the next thing. Okay. That problem just keeps cascading. But at what point are you going to take the time to do it right and then go from there?
Sir, well, that's going to be it for us on questions. But I'd offer you an opportunity to kind of say any parting words to the audience. And if you're interested, I'm genuinely curious if you might want to plug one of those tools that you wish that you would have known was there,
yeah,
that you now know is, yeah, there, maybe increase a little bit of exposure to it. So a commander who's out there looking for an option might be able to find, yeah, it.
Yeah. I'll just say this is great. I appreciate the invitation and, you know, for having a forum like this with podcasts, I think is awesome. And I told you before, I'm not, you know, anti-podcast. I mean, again, it's all about when you grow up, but you got to get your arms around things. I mean, there's certain podcasts I love listening to, and I think we do great here with the podcast. I mean, even our, you know, doctrine directorate, they do podcasts on, you know, doctrine, which is great. That's one of the tools. I watched a video last night that they put together, not quite, you know, TED Talk-like, but again, it's the MTT that's virtual. You know, you got Mr. Creed there, his team, and just walking through. And here's 3-0. And one of the things that he says right off the bat is like, this is not going to tell you everything you need to know, you know, kind of gives you the cliff notes, but it's enough to get you curious to go, well, let me go crack open the doctrine. And those things are out there. A lot of things in, you know, Combined Arms Training, that Combined Arms, you know, Center Training, CAT-T, that they're doing with regard to, you know, virtual reality. I mean, they have Vortex is the name of it. And what a unit can do is go to their site and figure out if I want to do, you know, rock drills, if I want to do sand tables virtually, put on the goggles and walk my team through it so they can see it kind of three-dimensional, then CAT-T has the how-to to do it. And everything they need to go by, it's like they'll give you the shopping list. And a lot of it is like things that your kids would recognize in terms of Xbox controllers, you know, things, you know, we see on commercials right now that are already on the shelf that we're buying for our kids. I mean, not so much my kids anymore, but, you know, we're buying them and we can use that same technology, reprogram it, and we've got our virtual, you know, rock drill. We've got our virtual three-dimension, you know, round that we can look at and have our mechanics, you know, spin around and talk about in a classroom. It's like there, and I'm just blown away by all those tools. But if you go to our site, you know, Combined Arms Center, and go to any of our subordinate organizations, you know, CAT-T, Mission Command Center of Excellence, Army U especially, lots of things on Army U, and just drill in and just kind of, you know, go for what speaks to you. I mean, what is your need right now? Because we're all going to go to, where's our crisis right now? So that company commander sitting out there, that battalion commander, that brigade commander sitting out there, if they just go to our site, you know, and start drilling, you know, anywhere that's kind of an area of concern, I'd almost guarantee you they're going to find answers that they need, to include, hey, how do I develop my training schedule? There's tools in there. And again, you got to excuse me for not knowing the name of it, or, you know, what we're calling it right now, but that will walk you through how to lay out your long range training calendar. Brilliant. I mean, I wish I had that. You know, at some point in time, you just learn by trial and error, but something that will at least give you 80% of it, and you just plug in, and here's what we're doing for the next year. And it kind of lays out, here's kind of your roadmap. And then you have to refine. Oh my goodness, that would have been mind blowing to young Captain Beagle or Lieutenant Colonel Beagle.
Well, I'll thank you again, sir, from the team here at School of Advanced Military Studies. On behalf of myself and the hosts, we really appreciate you making the time to come down here and have a great conversation with us. I learned something. I know that our other hosts learned something. I see the director of SAMS writing notes furiously. He learned something. So thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, the director, he's writing down notes to make me feel good. But I appreciate your team. I appreciate what you're doing. I look forward to seeing where this goes. I'll definitely be watching, you know, the podcast, you know, across the board, because I'm watching more. But that's just for me, you know, adapting. And that's what we all have to do at the end of the day, just be able to adapt. The last thing I will say and offer is, it was a point you brought up in my earlier, you know, statement from my change of command speech. And I've been thinking about it, because we've always said it, you know, you train for certainty, you educate for uncertainty. But if you look at Russia, Ukraine, I don't think we can say now, and this may be a little bit controversial, but something to think about, that we can say we're training for certainty, because, you know, nothing's really certain. Just given the environment that we're in and what we're seeing play out in Ukraine, is like, they couldn't have trained for that, but they're very agile. They're very adaptive. And, you know, a lot of uncertainty they've dealt with, you know, which leads me to another point. And we talk about, be comfortable being uncomfortable. I mean, I've heard that for 32 years. Be comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, we ask, go in, do your counseling. You ask the boss, hey, boss, what can I do better? Just be comfortable being uncomfortable. Okay, I got it. And we figure out what that means. But if you look at the Ukrainians, they're thriving in uncomfort. So we're used to being uncomfortable. We all are, for the most part, just given what we've done. But now we have to thrive in it, being uncomfortable, because there's something changing all the time, something we did not expect, something we did not train for, that, you know, we have to be ready for when we see it. So that'll be my final point.
This has been an official publication of the School of Advanced Military Studies. The views and expressions heard here are those of the authors and do not reflect the official position or opinions of SAMS, the U.S. Army, or the U.S. government. Stay up to date on all things SAMS and the Operational Arch by following us on Twitter at US_SAMS. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast. Additionally, if you have recommendations for an episode, send any proposals to operationalarch@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.